San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you with 50,000 watts of power from KFMB. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up the coast of Seattle, and down to Cabo on a good, and out to the desert. We are heard free on iTunes if you search IY Money, or if you search It's Your Money and Your Life, and we are streaming live at 760 KFMB, and all the podcasts can be heard at iymoney.com. And time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire, an accomplished marathon runner, a best-selling author, and a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. Richard, how are you tonight?
I am marvelous, Joe. Good to be here.
It is great to see you. Hey, we had a great week last week. The son of Gene Roddenberry, Rod Roddenberry, was here. We did a great event with him at Qualcomm. We also had Billie
Then
Jean.
Then I scooted down to the old San Diego Sports Arena to see Billie Jean King here for the World Team Tennis match.
With the San Diego Aviators.
She got a really neat surfboard with a picture of her winning Wimbledon in 75 on it.
Yeah, and then last week we had Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, right-hand man to Secretary of State and former Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Powell, on with us, which was a great show. And tonight we've got a real celebrity on the line. If anyone who's old enough to was around in the 60s remembers that there was a great controversial and very entertaining television show called the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, and on the line we have one of the brothers, Dickie Smothers. Dickie, how are you tonight?
Hello. I'm terrific. I'm not dead yet. I'm still here,
but recovering.
And by
with,
the way,
yes sir,
I thought you were putting in all the side effects of drugs, though. So you talk so fast, you know, and then they do the commercial and they say this could sort of help your asthma, and you say all the things, you get diarrhea, heart attack, all this shit, and ask your doctor if this is good for you. Boy, you fast talker. I nodding off? That is so quick.
Actually,
see, I'm used to talking to my brother, and he's really slow.
Really? We'll get to him in a minute. But Richard doesn't even drink coffee or has never smoked a cigarette.
Poor guy.
I do a little caffeine, but that's about it. I'm sorry to disappoint, but anyway. But anyway, gosh, it's such a treat to have you on.
It's good to be here, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to give what's your demographics on your listening audience? You ever check that out?
Well, it's all over the board. It probably skews a little bit older, but,
a little bit older. They tend to make a lot of money, own businesses, those kinds of folks.
Yeah.
So some people are old enough to remember 1995 and stuff like that.
Yeah, 95, sure.
they have gaps in their memory.
Well, I
but...
didn't want to make a too big a leap here. Yeah. Anyway, Tommy and I got, well, first of all, we're television babies, and if anybody's watching CNN, this is a plug for the 60s. They're doing they're in the middle of a 10-part documentary, 10 hours, the 1960s. And they started off with the television comes of age.
Right.
Comes in as a boob tube. Mm-hmm. Goes out covering the moonwalks and all these kinds of stuff. And it ended up in the 60s with the Smothers Brothers getting fired. But they covered all of the television at the end of that hour. They treated Tommy really well and myself, and what the Comedy Hour, the movement the Comedy Hour made in television.
Yeah.
And we didn't do it to make a movement or to cause anything, other than we were doing what we thought we should be able to do, entertain people and have content.
Well, you guys started out in Redondo, with the Redondo High School, but tell us how you even got started with music originally.
Well, we're local California boys, born in New York City, and Army brats. Mm-hmm. And because of World War II, we got separated from our dad when we were stationed in the Philippines with him, and grew up in Southern California in the San Fernando Valley. And we moved all around the basins, Altadena and Donga Sunland, and then high school time moved to Redondo Beach, and I did 4 years there. We had a wonderful choir director named Mr. Meisenheimer, Ted Meisenheimer, called Mr. M, and we were in the a cappella and the madrigal choirs are just so much fun, very ancient music. And Tommy picked up and learned the guitar, he just fell in love with the guitar when he was about 10 years old. So by the time he was around in high school, he was ready for dance bands, jazz, and all that stuff. And you know, like a lot of people that you've heard of the garage band.
Yeah.
You know, you get a couple of guys at school that think they play instruments and some are really good. Mm-hmm. And you practice and do cover stuff, right?
Right.
And so we covered the popular singers of the day, the four freshmen. We couldn't do the high-lows, of course. They were just outstanding. Mm-hmm. But we would sing rhythm and blues and stuff like that.
And folk music.
But we were around the music. That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. M, I did 4 years of choir with him, and he gave me a love of the music, too. And
well, you see,
when
now,
Tommy went to college, he graduated from Redondo in 1955. He went up to, after a year or so, working for the Southern California Gas Company and this and that, and got enough together to go to San Jose State College.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated in 1957, did 6 months active duty in the Army, and then went in the Reserves, mm-hmm. and went to Fullerton J.C. and El Camino J.C., and then I moved up to San Jose to join Tom,
mm-hmm.
with mom and an infant daughter. And we were right there at the time. The Kingston Trio got really hot.
Ah.
You know, MTA and Bono and all that stuff. That was like 1958, 59.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just singing regular stuff that we did in high school. and Tommy started to introduce songs. He's very dyslexic. Actually, Tommy's comedic growth grew out of a severe defective person. He had a lot of defects, and that was his defective is what do you call that? You know, when you think of things back, dyslexia.
Dyslexia. Yeah.
It really doesn't make you dumb. It just what you're wired a little bit different.
Yeah.
So things come out differently.
I think Nelson Rockefeller
one of the
had that.
Things. Mm-hmm. And so when he would make up stories about folk songs that he knew nothing about, it was funny as hell. People started laughing. I couldn't for the life of me, for the first part of our career, figure out what they were laughing at. I didn't think it was funny. This is my brother. And I would say, no, that's not right.
So you're,
Tom, that's
you're,
not, you're, no. And then he would say, you know, children are never in doubt, sold them right.
And then he just played on that, right? He played it up, right?
We played it up and it grew. You know, they say, if you write a book, write what you know about, what you lived.
Uh-huh.
And when you're on stage, someone said, be yourself. Well, you exaggerate yourself. Richard Pryor was one of our contemporaries. He exaggerated the black culture there in New York.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby exaggerated the family stuff. Mm-hmm. Our first job that we got at Purple Onion in San Francisco, someone said, I'll drive you up there. They have free auditions once a month.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't even have a car, so they drove us up to San Francisco. We waited our turn at the Purple Onion, which is across from the Hungry Eye, really hot nightclubs.
Mm-hmm.
And we got on and sang a song, and the owner's mother, was an old lady, was talking on the phone, taking reservations, and Tommy told her to shut up while we were doing our stuff. And he didn't even stop talking. He said, this song is about a shut up. And everybody started falling down. He said, these guys are good.
You guys are like 20 and 22. Who were some of the other people you were on the program with when you got rolling there? Can you probably use some other?
Well, I'll tell you who we saw in San Francisco across the street. We had no idea we were in show business at the time. We were just students doing this at night.
Right, you're 20 years old, right?
We'd see Jonathan Winters.
Oh, my gosh.
Lenny Bruce.
Whoa.
Mort Stahl.
Mm-hmm.
We'd see Professor Rincori, who was a legend.
Mm-hmm.
Nichols and May, brilliant. Elaine May and Mike
right.
Nichols.
Mm.
And we would see the top folk people of the day, too.
Hmm.
And that was in San Francisco, North Beach. There was no hotter, hipper nightclub spot in the nation. And I would include the Village, New York, Chicago, L.A. Nothing touched it.
Well, Chicago had Mr. Kelly's, but it sounds like you had a hotbed going up there. So,
Mr. Kelly's?
Yeah, in Chicago. You guys probably played.
Chicago, that was good.
Yeah.
But it wasn't as... There was a club right there, Division and North and State and all that stuff. That was a great town.
Yeah.
But for us, we sort of, you know, like, if you blow this, you ever had fun on the dandelions when you're a kid? You get that dandelion, you blow it, and all those seeds would go all over the place.
Yeah.
All those wheat seeds. Those seeds are just like us in life.
Wonderful.
We don't pick where we're going to land, do we?
No, but let's pick it up right there. We've got to take a short break, Dickie. Please stay with us. And Dickie Smothers will be on the line when you get back, folks. So we'll come back after this and a little classical gas. All right. That is some of the Smothers Brothers theme music That was written by Mason Williams, too, wasn't it, Dickie?
Which one? The theme?
The theme, wasn't it?
Yeah, along with Nancy Ames.
Really? Okay.
Nancy Ames, she was on TW3 the year before we were. She was a really good singer.
Yeah.
And Mason was living with her at the time, and he made a mistake playing the chords, and she said, play that again. And he played it. He said, that's cool. That's it's a musical mistake. And he says, that's what the Smothers Brothers do. They're two guys that make mistakes all the time. So that is a perfect theme, and it just turned out wonderful.
Well, yeah. that's how
he's
it
a very
goes.
Good friend. He wrote and played on and produced that great hit, Classical Gas.
Yeah, but we left off at the Purple Onion. So
Dickie, before the Purple Onion, San Jose State, just for the record, my father graduated from San Jose State, my late dad, my sister graduated from San Jose State. Now I have a 17-year-old freshman at San Jose State, my youngest daughter.
No kidding. Do they live there? Or do you guys get a good deal? Get a wholesale or what?
Yeah, exactly. Every generation, we get one family member in.
Well, we love it. It was State Teachers College back in the old days.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's a university, and they had us, about 41 years after we stopped. Tommy was a senior. He dropped out, didn't graduate. I was a sophomore and dropped out, didn't graduate, of course, because our career happened.
Right.
You always go back to school, and it was such a long shot to have anybody notice you in show business.
Yeah.
Somehow we were luckier than smart. We just knew, just go with it. But years later, they had us give the graduation commencement address.
Mm-hmm.
And we got honorary doctorates, and they only had 9 of them in the history of that school. It's the oldest land-grant school west of Mississippi.
Exactly.
Wow. And they'd only given away 9 doctorates. Wow. And Tommy told the president, said, well, you want us? You better give us a doctorate.
That's right.
So I had 32 units, two years in junior college, and now I'm Dr. Smothers Fine Arts.
There you go. So you got
of course,
your degree.
I think Bill Cosby probably has 100 doctorates.
He collects them. Cosby collects doctorates.
Well, you only need one, really, and congratulations.
Yeah, that's all I care. I don't care compare myself to anybody.
There you go.
We were so blessed to be in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, San Jose was blessed with the produce that mm-hmm. kept it going, the canneries and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then have Silicon Valley come in there again.
Mm-hmm.
And to be so close to San Francisco. And I didn't mean to dismiss anybody at a city's nightlife and stuff, but we couldn't have been in a better place to see the most cutting-edge comedians working in the United States 100 yards from where we were working.
And you probably
got was a renaissance of comedy. You know, before them, you get the one-liner people,
burlesque
comics,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Henny Youngman type.
Yeah.
Even Bob Hope and those guys.
Yeah.
We used to see Bob Newhart. Who'd ever think you could make people laugh talking on a phone?
Right, and stuttering.
And Mort Saul read the paper. Hell, I read the paper and didn't laugh. He read the paper and we all laughed. So there was such a wide range of humor back then.
Yeah.
And it was all coming out, and improv theater was starting off.
Mm-hmm.
Shelley Berman was brilliant in that. And Nichols and May,
oh my gosh,
they were godlike.
Yeah.
It was so amazing what they did.
Of course.
And we didn't take from anybody. We just saw stuff.
Well, no one could do your act. Who could do your act?
What made us really successful.
Yeah.
And actually brilliant, but brilliantly placed out of our control was we were unique.
Yeah.
I don't think we were brilliant as far as like even George Carlin, man, what a brain he is.
Yeah.
Tommy and I were just very unique and we fit the spot.
Yeah.
You could be as good a singer as Barbara Streisand, but we already got one.
Yeah.
So to be unique is a very important thing. And then, you know that documentary, that 20 Feet from Stardom?
I've got to see that, but I've heard of it.
Oh, you've got to see it, because it will explode your mind on how good you could be and not make it to the microphone.
Right,
front. And it has nothing to do with your talent.
Right, it's just luck.
It has all to do with the material, the timing, and all that kind of stuff.
Timing and
our timing was everything.
Yeah.
And if our timing was done, say, like Carol Burnett was brilliant, and she almost got our spot. Instead of us,
really?
Against Bonanza,
huh.
Things wouldn't have unfolded like they did
for right.
television at that time. She was brilliant. She would have been great, but she didn't have a political bone in her body.
Right.
She didn't have to. No one else was doing it.
That wasn't a Sunday night show. Yours was.
Yeah, but she, her show with you mentioned Tim Conway.
Yeah,
he was from Cleveland.
Well, yes,
and his name was Tom Conway. But they already had a Tom Conway in the union, which was you couldn't have the same name. Mm-hmm. It's like, isn't that awful? Someone took your name before you got there. And so they changed it to Tim. Uh-huh. And he was introduced nationally on the Steve Allen Sunday Night, a variety show, the same year Steve put us on as comics. You know, Steve Allen was a huge fan of comedians. He had a whole list of them on his show. And he was really great. And
he launched a lot of careers.
He started right then, same time. And he, of course, is with Harvey Korman. He couldn't have been with a better group of people.
Yeah.
His timing was right, too.
Well, how did you guys assembled Steve Martin and Albert Brooks and Mason Williams and Pat Paulson, who I saw here at the Improv in the 80s one night.
Not Albert Brooks. We had
or his brother,
Bob Einstein.
His brother. I'm sorry.
Bob Einstein.
Right.
Albert Brooks' name was Einstein. He said, I couldn't be funny if my name was Albert Einstein. That's not right. Someone took his name, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Tommy had a sensitivity that was right for the times. And as I said, CNN is doing that hour on the 60s.
Uh-huh.
And as Newsweek a few years ago had a cover article, 1968, the year that defined America.
Right.
This is in their opinion. Mm-hmm. And the things, when CBS gave us creative control of the show, they just thought it would be normal stuff, mm-hmm. artistic stuff. And the war had not heated up in Vietnam that much when we got the show, 67. It was growing. The civil rights was happening.
Right.
The things like gun control and all these things were happening. And Tommy's mentality and sensitivity said, hey, we want to do things that are related to society, not just have like a Dobie Gillis show, mm-hmm. like our sitcom. It didn't relate to anything going outside the studio. And right. they said, that sounds good, because nothing was happening as far as they were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were at the scene of the accident and responded to what was going on outside. And we had the most popular hour in television, 9 o'clock Sunday night. More sets were turned on, mm-hmm. mostly to Bonanza. The fact is, the spot they put us in was last in the ratings,
huh.
and Bonanza was number one. So they put us in a black hole, mm-hmm. so we were supposed to fail. They had failed and failed and failed. And so here these two little boys, mom's little boys, like to sing folk songs and argue,
mm-hmm.
became a threat to the safety of America just 2.5 years later, and they fired us. That wasn't all our doing, but I'm so proud of my brother's integrity. He's a flawed person. We all are.
Mm-hmm.
And but he had the right ethics,
mm-hmm.
morality, talent. He loved talent. He surrounded them. The more talented you were, the more he wanted you on the show.
Now he's,
some comedians don't want anybody funnier than them.
Now he runs the. He's up here. He's still on the West Coast, isn't he? And you guys.
He's up in Sonoma County.
Yeah, yep. You guys are still in touch.
In the middle
right?
of a vineyard.
You ever get out here much? You guys are still on very good terms, I assume, right?
We love each other so much.
Oh, that's great.
And it's sort of like we deal with each other like we were ex-husbands and wives. And, you know, it's we love each other more by not having to deal with each other on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But the love there, and he gave me a life that was unimaginable.
Huh.
And I never would have had it. And I gave him the same thing. He would have been successful somehow.
Yeah.
I gave him the vineyard. I started a winery, and then we planted a vineyard up there.
Yeah, you
one
guys.
Day, he and Jim Stafford were, one year, we were doing Solid Gold Dancers show in Vegas. We had all these great dancers for 6 months at our beck and call. I didn't get one. I did not get one dancer. I didn't know I liked senior women at the time. But,
all right there, Dickie. Why don't you just hold that thought right there? We got to take a little break. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money in Your Life with Dickie Smothers right after this. All right, we're back with Dickie Smothers of the Smothers Brothers, and I think we left off with him talking about his brother Tommy and Jim.
Anyway, Jim and Jim drank a lot of beer and stuff, and after a show, they had the suite above me at the Riviera, and they'd be pounding on the floor, tapping and playing their guitars and singing and keeping me awake.
Oh,
damn, I got to get my brother a hobby. So I went out and bought him four woods for golf, persimmon
uh-huh.
woods.
Uh-huh.
And I said, here, get a hobby. And I was learning golf at the time, and then Tom became really taken up with golf. Got down to about a 10 or 12 handicap.
Mm-hmm.
Did wonderful appearances. It gave him a time to decompress from showbiz.
Yeah.
That's what I was looking for.
Well,
even if you're loving showbiz, it's just like being an accountant after the tax season, man, you need to decompress somehow.
Yeah.
You know? And so I helped him like that. And his vineyard is lovely. It changed his life. I made excellent wines. I did the winery. I did things that did not take the comedic talent.
Mm-hmm. The winery has your mother's maiden name on it, right? Is that the reference?
It does now.
Okay.
It's Remick Ridge.
Yeah, Remick Ridge.
Remick. And it was Smothers Wines when I started.
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Mondavi told me that's the smartest thing I ever did. Because he said, you didn't say Italians, but people want to, he said, when they drink your wine, they want to look at the bottle and say, who's responsible for this wine? You know? And I said, Smothers. The first year we were out, we entered the L.A. County Fair, and by that time, Tommy and I were doing a Broadway play in New York, our one and only play called I Love My Wife. Mm-hmm. We replaced the original cast, mm-hmm. and it was a big hit, and it was the best time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
We were really good in it, but I was away from my winery, which was in Santa Cruz at the time, and my wife called me up and said, Hey, honey, your wine won the show. I said, did we get a gold? No, you won the show. I said, no, you get gold, silver, and bronze. No, you won the show.
Wow.
I said, really? She said, you won the grand sweepstakes for your late harvest Gewurztraminer, and you got two golds.
Holy cow.
And a silver. And we just had a little winery in my garage in Santa Cruz. We bought grapes, and we had raisin boxes. We dumped them in this little thing. It was like a hand. Huh. And wines. We did a couple thousand cases.
And
I only had enough money to do it because I sold a car to Bill Hara, 32 Ford. He gave me $40,000 for this car. And I started a winery.
Huh.
And so I'm in New York. I hear we won the Grand Sweepstakes, LA County Fair.
Hmm.
And then the Wall Street Journal had an article, Tiny Smothers Winery, top prize.
Huh.
And the wine that won the sweepstake, everybody wanted it. And I only had 250 cases of it.
Huh.
And I did things accidentally. You know, Tommy was doing a dinner theater at that time, the late 70s,
mm-hmm.
and I had nothing to do. You know, a straight man without a comedian is an announcer,
yeah.
You know, and I didn't have anybody to announce. So I had a little acreage in Santa Cruz Mountains, and telling to some guys, he said, I'll do a winery for you. So I built a little winery on my property, and it changed our lives.
Wow.
And Tommy said, it's so neat, Dick. He says, when we got fired in 1969, we didn't get canceled. We got fired.
Hmm.
And they fired us illegally. And by 1972, when we sued them, we won in federal court, breach of contract, copyright. We won everything.
Oh, I didn't
but they
know
got
that.
Us off the show. And I'll tell you, I'll clear it up really easily on why we were fired. We didn't do what CBS wanted us to do. They kept wanting to censor us.
Right.
You can't have this guy on the show. You couldn't have Pete Seeger on the show. You can't have these little things, another Mothers for Peace. It might be communists,
mm-hmm.
This or that. And we didn't do what they wanted us to do. So they kept taking pieces of our show out.
Yeah.
And they didn't lie. They felt the perception was in the industry and the public is they had lost control over the Smothers Brothers. Here they are, this big network. All we were was 1 hour of their show, of their program in a week, and we were thumbing our nose at it.
Yeah.
They could not have that. The perception was they had to be change the perception that they couldn't control the Smothers Brothers. So the sales wing of CBS really wanted us there.
Yeah.
The black hole of Sunday night was no longer a black hole. It was a cash bonanza for them advertising.
Yeah.
But they fired us, and... So I think that's why, one of the reasons, they fired us before the American public got tired of the show and the ratings went way down.
Mm-hmm.
They were still into us. And the fact is, it wasn't just another entertainment show. People were getting sensitive to the anti-war movement, to the fact that the government was lying to us at certain things.
Hmm.
And the Smothers Brothers didn't overdo our show and make it heavy. We seasoned.
Yeah.
The Comedy Hour had seasoned. We had pieces. About very subtly put in, and we didn't hit it with a sledgehammer like some people did.
And
I show our show anywhere you want, and I'm proud of every single one of them.
Yeah.
By the way, some of them were ordinary, some of them were extraordinary, and some were in the middle.
Well,
America loved basically America loved what we did. And I still get, I go to my favorite restaurants here in Sarasota where I live, mm-hmm. a little town, mm-hmm. and I get people, they open their hearts to me, and I can't do anything but give them a hug and mm-hmm. say, thank you so much for allowing us to be part of your life.
I remember.
And so what a gift that is that we get.
And all the big names, all the big stars that were they came on your show. I mean, unbelievable. You meet.
They always do when you got a hot show.
Yeah, the Doors. I mean, George Harrison.
I remember the Who show when he, what's his name, set his hair on fire.
The big explosion.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, there's a great book written by David B. and Cooley. It's called Dangerously Funny. You don't have to know his name if anybody wants to get the book mm-hmm. on Google. Dangerously Funny. Mm-hmm. And he is an amazing expert on the 60s. He's a fan. And he did a book all about the Smothers Brothers' struggles. Mm-hmm. And it was bought by George Clooney's production team. And
really?
They've been trying to put together a script.
Nice.
A film on it.
Interesting.
It's not the book that will make the movie. It's just, can they create a script? Mm-hmm. To make people want to see the movie mm-hmm. and care about us. And yeah. a lot of times when they buy books to make into movies, they just don't get a script that will turn people on. So it may not get made. Mm-hmm. But you could see the whole, like, the Who was on and the drum exploded. That's all I remember. I thought someone put in an extra charge. Well, David does a whole chapter on that, uh-huh. and it's brilliant. He does a whole chapter on Pete Seeger trying to get waist deep on the Big Muddy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a political song.
Yeah.
First of all, CBS said you can't have him because he was still tainted by the McCarthy hearings,
yeah.
which was a witch. We know that was a witch hunt, and it wasn't true, and it wasn't even American what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But we finally got him on. He was the Weavers, they had hits early in the 50s, like Good Night, Irene, Beautiful Brown Eyes, Untoppable, Smokey, mm-hmm. and those kind of things. They're part of Americana. Anyway, he wrote a song about a captain in the Marines that were said to his company to follow him across the river. He says, trust me. I know what I'm doing. I'll get you across the river. And the river is up to my thigh. It's up to my waist. It's mm-hmm. up to my neck. And it was alluding to Lyndon Johnson leading us across the river of Vietnam.
Yeah.
And there was no hope.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a good thing to do, you know. And he got this, it took two tries, and he got the song on the show, and I'm so proud of it. It's one of the highlights of us sticking to our guns.
Now,
and it was that year that Walter Cronkite came out and editorialized on the CBS News that it might be a good idea to wind this war down.
Well, now,
it's not going to happen.
There was a 2002 documentary about you guys called Smothered. Is that...
Yes.
I have to see this.
That was good.
Really?
We opened up all our archival stuff to this lady, Muldaur.
Mm-hmm.
Muldaur is her last name.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, we said, don't even talk to us until it's done. You see the material and you do what you want to do. And when she gave us the first CD of it,
mm-hmm.
DVD, Tommy and I wouldn't play it. We kept it in our suitcases as we're traveling around. We were afraid to look at it. We had no idea what she said about us. And
well,
I thought she did a good job.
Good. I'm going to have to. I hope that's on Netflix or someplace. Also, I know on YouTube there's a lot of your stuff that you appeared with the Boston Pops Orchestra, you and Tommy.
Sure.
That had to be a great memory because that was John Williams, for gosh sakes. And
yeah, he shared his bottle of vodka with me. So I need a drink. Bigger Thrill was doing Dolly Parton TV show
uh-huh.
with Willie Nelson, and I went in his bus, and I got the shooter tequila with him, and Tommy lit up a joint with him.
Oh,
so, you know, that didn't get any better than Willie Nelson.
All right, on that high note, Dickie, we've got to take a little break. We'll come right back with more Fix Your Money in Your Life right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with Dickie Smothers of the Smothers Brothers, and I remember Jimmy Crack Corn and I Don't Care. I love that bit. So you guys were doing that forever, though, right? You were doing that in high school with Jimmy Crack Corn, and you grab his guitar?
No, we didn't. We were not funny in high school.
Oh, no?
The comedy, the first time my brother was funny and got laughs was when we were at San Jose State. I had just moved up from L.A., to join them there the spring semester of 1959.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to sing a couple songs for the freshman registration dance. And he said, why don't we knew that you can't practice and get perfect. You have to get in front of an audience to get the flop sweat out. You know what I mean?
Right.
You get very nervous.
Right.
So we went to a little folk club called the Kerosene Club.
Uh-huh.
It was on Cannery Row in Ray Street, Canneries in San Jose. And it was just beer, and they had little folk singers, and they let us do it for fun. They gave us all the beer we wanted. And Tommy introduced the song. And uh-huh. I never heard him introduce a song before. At high school, you just stop and talk between songs.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to do next? I don't know. You know? So he made up the story, and people were laughing their ass off. And I said, and I'm looking at Tom, and I didn't say anything back then. It didn't. We weren't as they saw us on TV.
Uh-huh.
This was just
right.
two guys singing a song. Actually, we had a third guy singing with us.
Right.
And we just watched Tommy talk, and then we sang a song.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first time he was funny. But he in high school, he wrote amazing nomination speeches
mm-hmm.
for people.
Hmm.
He had a style that he was working on. He hated people that would giggle, to get up in class and giggle in speech class and blah, blah, blah. So Tommy got this awkward thing going, sort of like Steve Martin,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
He developed that. He wasn't that great. He loved magic,
mm-hmm.
but you can't become a hit in magic unless you're really bad.
Yeah, like Fly Dean. Like
versus
Fly
the other way around. And his book, I Was Born Standing Up, Steve Martin,
uh-huh.
brilliant book. It showed how he struggled to find the character, how
yeah.
to develop that comedic thing. And Tommy did the same without knowing that's what he was doing.
Right.
Fact is, he didn't even know he was a comedian. He thought he was a monologuist. He says, I'm a monologuist.
Monologist.
To be honest, we were just doing what we'd like to do.
Isn't
you know,
that great, though? I mean,
that's what then in America was so neat when they discovered us with my first record, which we did called Live at the Purple Onion
yeah.
in San Francisco. We've been working about a year and a half, and it was every single piece of material we knew went
huh.
into that. And it was proven material that worked and worked and worked, and still our favorite album.
Is that still available?
It didn't sell because nobody heard of us
yeah.
until we got Jack Parr, 1961 January, the only late night show. Television made stars instantly back then.
Yeah.
If you, like Jack Parr, if you could sit on the panel,
yep.
which is a hard thing to do back then,
mm-hmm.
You sit on the panel, that could help.
Yeah.
And Jack Parr was very neurotic.
Yes, he was.
And he covered his ass all the time. Interesting always.
Uh-huh.
And he had no idea who we were. And an act fell through in work in New York, and somebody got us on his show. So he brought us out before we did our song to tell people he'd never heard of us before. And he said, I don't know if they're any good or not. He was distancing himself from us.
What a vote of confidence.
He said, they have a funny name, Smothers. It's their name, Smothered Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Their dad was killed by the Japanese in World War II.
Oh,
that's a laugh getter.
Oh, my God.
And he was a veteran, too. So, and I know where his heart was on that. It wasn't negative at all.
Yeah.
He said, and I don't like folk singers. I do like Burl Ives. And that was fixed. I like Burl Ives, but I don't like folk singers. And I don't know what they do. Tell you the truth. Hey, boys, this is what he did to try to... He's devious. He would try to
throw you,
nail
huh?
you.
Yeah.
So he said, he said, hey, boys, what's the difference between hillbilly singers and folk singers? And Tommy didn't even take a stop a second. He just said, hillbilly sing higher. And the way he sang it, the audience fell on the floor, the TV audience. And so without trying, he gave us, we couldn't pay for a better introduction.
Yeah.
By the time we opened our mouths and started singing, the fox went out on his chase one night, bayed to the moon to give him light, many a mile ago that night before he reached the town. It's an old folk song, right?
Uh-huh.
And in the middle of it, he starts quacking. Because
oh, yeah, I remember. I remember.
It was sort of hilarious that you had to like us. Anyway, the audience already bought us by
yes.
the time we opened our mouths.
Yeah.
And that, I got to tell you, that was the luck of the draw. Pat Harrington Jr., an actor, that was a headliner at the club we were working at in New York,
uh-huh.
was a regular on The Tonight Show. He said, I'll try to get you on, but he don't like folk singers. And we got on the Friday, the day before we left. We were there for 3 weeks. We did that show, and we did a bunch of them after that. And we just admired Jack Parr's charm.
Mm-hmm.
He was neurotic and all that. Those are not negatives. Those are the things
right.
that make you interesting.
Right. Of course.
He was always interesting.
Now, we had Johnny Carson's nephew on here, and you must have gotten on with him a few times, right, with Johnny Carson?
Oh, a lot. Johnny loved us. Mm-hmm. He loved Tommy. He said, do the thing. And Tommy would, all Tommy could do was do that golf swing that Johnny did at the start of his show.
Yeah.
He never had his voice, but and he would do all these mannerisms and exaggerated, but Johnny would fall on the floor. Hey, Johnny was the greatest. Host ever on the late night television, I think.
Good straight
he
man.
He was perfect.
Now, the yo-yo man, how did Tommy get into yo-yos? Because that's a nice...
named Rick Kuna. Rick Kuna was a folk singer, had a song called The Yo-Yo Man. And Tommy and I are from the era in the 1940s. The Yo-Yo Man from Duncan and Cheerio Yo-Yos. They'd have these... Generally, they were Filipinos. They were real expert. Filipinos, yo-yo was a big thing. Mm-hmm. They go around for the manufacturers and go to various toy stores in little towns and have contests. So, you know, that was one of the things the kids would do is you listen to the radio for Sky King and the Lone Ranger.
I met Sky King when I was six.
I remember Sky King.
Oh, wow. I remember
and then you had the yo-yo, and you were hoping to get a merit badge or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tommy was just decent with it. And along, Rick Kuna was a friend of Mason Williams. And Mason really turned us on to a lot of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Tommy, you got to listen to this song. It's called The Yo-Yo Man. Rick sang it to him. He said, you know, Mason, I said, you know, you could do a couple yo-yo tricks and sing the song. He said, that's a nice piece of material. And so Tommy said, yeah. And Tommy started practicing, and he got better and better. And then by the time we had one of our shows later on, after this is the shows we had 1988, 89, 90.
Yeah.
He collected all the living world champion yo-yo guys. He'd have them on. They were always young and good, young at heart and good. And Tommy would have play a song, and Tommy would do a little yo-yo dance, and I would be the voice of yo. And Tommy would be the yo-yo man. And I told him, I said, I think you're crazy. That's not going to work. You only know seven tricks. I mean, so you get to the same tricks every week. He said, sure. We're just going to change the clothes and do a little different thing. We'll frame it. And it was a very popular piece on TV. And until we retired, when we got billed at the concerts, it would say, appearing, blah, 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 blah. The yo-yo man got bigger hand than we did.
Yeah. Well, he was pretty darn good. I mean, I saw the one he did with the Boston Pops. I mean, he was
very, isn't that neat?
He was very good.
Charming. It's wonderful. And very positive.
Yeah.
Those are good stuff. Yeah. What other thing? I've talked too much. Any questions? Other questions?
Richard, Jack? You must have a couple questions. Let's see what Richard has.
Well, so how early in your career with CBS, when you had the Smothers Brothers show, did the controversy with management there start about the censorship? I mean, was that near the end, or was that pretty much continuous the whole way?
It started... I would say probably somewhere around the third week.
Okay.
But that wasn't on political things. It just, they called it continuity. Censorship was called continuity department or program practices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they had these guys that had to fill these spots. And they would just make, I think they had to justify their position. And none of them were bad people. We loved the personnel in CBS.
Anyway, Dickie, that's all the time we have right now, but stick around. We could get some more bonus track with you, and if everyone goes to iymoney.com, they can hear it there. So thank you so much.
I wish you all the best.
Thank you. Same to you, and we'll be in touch. Dickie Smothers, formerly of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, we'll be in touch with him. It was a great pleasure and honor to speak with him. And I would like to also thank our sound engineer, Eric Rubalcava, for always making us sound good, and our account executive, Craig Blanke, and our programming genius here at KFMB, Dave Sniff. And Richard, always great to see you. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time on It's Your Money and Your Life, right here on AM 760 KFMB. Good night now.